heavy lift vehicle. So I, as far as the real heavy lift vehicles go, what I consider like super heavy lift, they'll probably be the first one to do it. Doesn't look like SpaceX is going to succeed with that. They have problems. I mean, they've launched 9 big heavy lift vehicles, super heavy lift vehicles, and they've had some success in some of the things that they're trying, but, you know, when you see an explosion, it's usually coming from them. The last one exploded on the pad, destroyed a lot of their infrastructure. Well, it wasn't actually a launch pad. It was a test launch location where it was testing the engine. Blew up, took out all kinds of, you know, tanks and, you know, they're presently reaching that. And they have a lot of damage with that. And the design of the rocket is not right. Otherwise, they, you know, wouldn't keep failing. So I think this land is going to be something to watch for Washington. Actually, there's a lot of companies coming online with rockets. Rocket Lab is doing good with their Electron rocket. Sometimes launch it to a part. They're doing good, and that's an expendable rocket right now, the Electron rocket, and that's a light lift vehicle, but I think they're up to some 60-odd or maybe more flights. I haven't checked lately, but they're doing very well, but they have a medium heavy lift vehicle on the development called the Neutron rocket, and that will be launched from the East Coast. Not Florida East Coast, but northern East Coast from Virginia, from Wallops Island. They have the launch complex already built. And the rocket is should be tested maybe by the end of this year, the first Neutron rocket. And that will be a reusable vehicle as well, completely reusable, including the what would be the upper stage. Have a rocket that will launch from Virginia with the main rocket engines, and they're calling their engines Archimedes. Anyway, it will launch the rocket to orbit, and then the front of the rocket opens up like an alligator. You know, instead of the fairings just separate, it's flying away. The fairings open up and allow, let's say, the equivalent of a second stage to leave with a satellite on it, and that will, you know, go to its location. The big alligator will close back up, and the whole vehicle will fly back out of orbit. Anyway, that's the plan for Neutron, and we'll be looking forward to see how that works. That'll come back and land on a barge too. You have a barge floating in the North Atlantic Ocean, and I think they have future problems, future capabilities of actually coming back to land. But for now, they'll be coming back on a barge, bring it back to Virginia, refurbish it, and send them up again. So looking forward to the Neutron rocket. It's a cool looking rocket too. Any comments? Okay, nothing heard. Gilmore Space, another rocket company. So this one comes from the land down under. They're developing the Eris rocket. Eris will be launched from Australia. And they were supposed to go up the other day, but there was upper level winds. So that they had some other technical issues. But now it looks like they're planned to go off on the 27th of this month. So that's coming up. And that will be the first launch into orbit for Australia for a company with a rocket. And, the rocket is actually built in Australia. 50 years ago, they did launch another rocket. But that was for England. And that was it, just that one rocket. And before that, a year or two before that, they sent over a Redstone rocket, I guess, to the States. And they put a payload on that. They launched from Australia. But that was it. There's no other plans. They've done hundreds of sounding rockets. You know, the sounding rockets are suborbital flights. But this Eris vehicle that they're building has four engines on the first stage, one of the same engines for the second stage. And if it gets to orbit, they'll be very happy about that. It's expendable, as far as I know. But in the future, they plan on building a larger vehicle, and then a heavy lift vehicle of the same kind of design, same kind of, they use a different kind of fuel. So once they get to that point, they even have long-term goals, of course, you know, many years from now, where they'd be able to launch humans from orbit. So a lot of things going on in the space world. I'd like to see Eris get off the ground and succeed. That's what we need. Competing against one another. And we'll see what happens with that. I want to mention Starlab. Starlab is a space station that's being built. I think I mentioned it last week, but I don't remember saying how it was going to get to orbit. It's a large space station. But once SpaceX has their big rocket finally built, they have long-term plans of using that rocket for reusable vehicle. But one of the payloads they plan on putting on that vehicle will be Starlab. One launch and off it goes. So we'll see how that goes. That will be able to have a crew of like four on a regular basis. So everybody's competing to see which company is going to have the first commercial space station in orbit. You know, eventually they know that ISS will go away probably in the early 1930s. I've heard 1930, and I've heard 1931. But we'll see how that works out. Any comments? Okay. Sitting there. The shuttle system had a whole bunch of shuttles that were developed. It started with Enterprise. Enterprise never went to space, but that was the first one to actually fly. What they did is they attached it to the top of the 747, and it flew about half a dozen times. They would bring it up to altitude, release it from the 747, and it will come down and land. And they had a crew in there, two pilot and co-pilot, and they would, they always call them commander and pilot. Anyway, they would come down and land, and they started doing this out in New Mexico, White Sands. And that was the beginning of the shuttle flights. Of course, after that, you had Columbia, had Challenger, of course, and Endeavour. And, you know, eventually you had like five of these shuttles that were going up and down for a total of 135 flights over all these years. Of course, we know where two of them wound up, Challenger and Columbia. Unfortunately, were lost, and each one lost a crew of seven. But the other ones were still around. Enterprise wound up on the Intrepid here in New York, you know, by the Hudson River. And, you know, that. And then you had a couple of the other ones. And one of the ones is Discovery. Discovery was taken over by the Smithsonian Museum. So now the politicians, in a weird way of thinking, have decided to it would be a good idea to pour millions of dollars. And they thought, well, maybe it cost $10 million. It looks like it'll probably cost around $400 million. They're thinking about moving Discovery from Washington and flying it on a 747 all the way down to Texas. To leave it down there. And naturally, Smithsonian is not only against it, but they're saying that NASA turned this thing over to us. The government, Congress, President, nobody has the right to take Discovery away from us and go anywhere. You know, we're the caretakers of this vehicle. So you'll probably see that in the news. And I guess they didn't think that out when politicians down in Texas felt that, oh, it'd be a good idea to have this thing down here. And when it's down here, we could charge people $30 and $40 and $60 to come look at the Discovery. Well, right now, it's in Washington, D.C. You know, for the cost of me getting there, I could actually go see this thing for nothing. You know, the American people have the right to look at all the stuff on that's in Smithsonian, which of course I've done in the past. So hopefully they'll work out that problem. You know, everybody wants their own shuttle. I guess the other one is in California. So, yeah, any comments? WS2M. NASA administrator, well, let's put it this way, the lack of one. So I'm not sure how they're handling things over there, right? They have this one lady, Janet Petro, she's more or less took over, you know, since January. She's been doing very good, no problems. But now they want to replace her with this guy, Duffy. Duffy is he's from a MTV, they said a reality TV show when he was younger, and right now he's in charge of the Department of Transportation, and maybe he could do two jobs, and we're going to have this guy in charge of NASA. And the article I read, they actually can't find a picture of him on any of the NASA sites, you know, the locations. They can't find a picture to put up. And from what I'm reading, there's other people that they thought were in charge. So I guess this will probably be worked out by the next net. But right now, I'm not really sure 100% who's actually running NASA. But, you know, all good things come to an end, and I hope they figure out, you know, who's running the show. Any comments? WS2N.
WBB2BX, though.
Frank, very good. Glad you joined me here. And I think I pretty much covered everything. I think I had one topic left. Back to you, Frank.
Yeah, okay. As I understand it, I think from Dr. Pamela Gaza podcast, Escape Velocity Space News, which I think is also a public television show and a YouTube show. I believe she explained that what was going on with some civil service employees, and I'm not remembering her name right now, is currently acting administrator. And this is my guess, not hers. That was done intentionally because under the Hatch Act, I believe, civil service employees cannot politically advocate before Congress. Therefore, this employee was powerless to defend NASA's budget, and Congress was free to do a hatchet job on the budget, pardon the pun of sorts. So the answer is there is somebody in charge, but she's really not empowered to do a hell of a lot. That's my understanding of the situation. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Well, it was either Janet Petra. I know she's been at it since January. And she was, is the acting administrator. She's going to go back to her old job with NASA, and they're supposed to replace her now with this Sean Duffy, the MTV guy. But you had another one, an acting associate administrator, Vanessa White. She was, maybe she's the one that you're talking about, or who knows. And, yeah, in other words, they don't have the power to make decisions. Is that what you're saying, Frank?
Well, my understanding is that there's civil service employees, and they don't have the authority under the Hatch Act to advocate politically before Congress. So effectively, they don't have the power to make decisions. So they finally put Sean Duffy there, who's Secretary of Transportation and a bunch of other things. So he would have that authority, but he's also doing a couple of other jobs. I doubt very much that's entirely legal, but this administration doesn't care whether anything's illegal. They just kind of do things and dare Congress and the courts to stop them for whatever it's worth. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. It's kind of bizarre. Yeah, that's why I thought I'd bring it up. It's, for years, we're able to say, Nelson was the last guy, we know who he was. The other guy from Oklahoma was before him, and so on and so forth. You could pin it down. You could bring up NASA administrators and go all the way from the beginning, all the people that were involved in all the way down the line. That's what I should do. I should bring that up again and see who they actually have now for the NASA administrator. They have them numbered, Well, who knows, Frank? Anyway, I think last week, but I wanted to mention that it's been 50 years since we had the Soyuz dock with the Apollo vehicle. back in 75. And I remember that. That was a big deal. And that kind of changed everything. And you had administrators at the time from Russia and, well, USSR at the time. And NASA, they got together. They put together this incredible mission. Very political. You know, NASA built the special docking adapter that they needed because the Soyuz, you know, is not compatible with the docking adapter that the Apollo has. So they needed this, you know, this steel in between. And they eventually met up in orbit. They went back and forth in each other's vehicles. NASA had three people, Russia had two. And
that was time complete.
The beginning. I mean, that really led to cooperation, not only with the International Space Station, but with Mir. We sent, over the years, five different shuttles docked with spacecraft. Mir Space Station, we had five visits from the shuttles before the International Space Station was up in the air. So that was in the 90s. So, you know, it really changed everything. But now, you know, things really got kind of like in reverse. The Russians, they can't get away from us fast enough now. But, you know, we still need each other in space. The Russians are handling the propulsion end of the International Space Station. The United States is handling the power from the gigantic solar panels, delivering that, you know. Now it's over 200 kilowatts to the station. And, you know, they distribute the power throughout. So they need each other to keep the thing flying. But in the future, you're going to see independent space stations. You already have one, of course, by China. They have a standard crew of three. We have a standard crew of seven. And that's pretty much it. Anyway, we got close to park here. Looking at my new park weather. Piece of equipment that I finally got in the mail. It took a while. The previous one quit. So this one has temperature, humidity, time. Very good. It's by La Crosse. That company used to be advertising QST many years ago. I don't see it anymore. So we'll close down for now, and unless you have further comments, Frank, back to you. WS2N.
No, I think it's the next bedtime, and I certainly appreciate your space segment as usual. So have a good night, Sunny 3, WB2BXO.
Okay, Frank, and thank you for checking in and all your input. So now I'm going to, before I turn it over to Roy, we'll be on tomorrow night for the Club Infonet. That's going to be followed by George, KD2FIU, does the flopper shop, and that is always followed by Radio Newsline. So that's I always listen to that. I know, yeah, you can get it online, but it's cool to listen to it through the club repeater. Back over to you, Roy. AT2GS, WS2N for the SpaceNet report for TechNet.
Very good, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all that you do for the technical net and all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it, and I appreciate it as well. I appreciate everyone who participated tonight. Hope you had a fun time. I hope you learned a few things. I hope you were entertained. And I hope you'll come back next Sunday at 8 p.m. when we try and do this all over again. So as per usual, I will recite a couple of wise words from some very wise men. Our own Dick K2RIW always would end his technical mess with the advice to be kind to each other. That's always good advice. And good old Epictetus, it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So keep your mind open to new ideas, but not so wide open that your brain falls out, because that would be a travesty. Anyway, have a great week. Stay safe, be well, and come back next Sunday. This is AC2GS formally closing this particular episode of the Limark Technical Net after I say, Slava Ukraini.
W2VL repeater. tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. The W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.